Oh, I'm supposed to do the intro. Yeah, I'm not used to this. So, hey, I'm Chris. That guy over there is Travis. Say hi, Travis.
Hi, Travis.
There you go. This is number three, the dark match. Yeah.
And what is the dark match?
Oh, tonight, New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom 11.
That's right.
We 4 days late, but we're getting there.
Hey, four is better than 20, right?
Yeah.
So, hey.
Yeah.
It's the 11th annual Wrestle Kingdom, and what we do on Dark Match here is we normally, after a pay-per-view is over, we hit the record button, and we start doing our instant recap, instant reactions to the pay-per-view. We did one. If you go back on the channel, we have one for Survivor Series, one for
TakeOver Toronto the night before.
Yeah.
Like, we went back-to-back for those.
Yeah, so we did that just to kind of test the waters. We liked how the feel of the show went. So we said,
apparently y'all did too. That's why we're here.
Yeah, so thank you for if you're tuning in right now. Hit the subscribe button below. Leave a comment. Tell us what you think. If we're wrong or we're right, or if you agree, disagree.
Or if we're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. And if you're subscribed, check out our weekly show also every Wednesdays live on the YouTubes and join the live chat also.
Yeah. This will be up on iTunes eventually. Hook or crook, it'll be up on iTunes.
Yes,
Facebook.com/UCWrestlingRadio. And Twitter is at HWrestlingRadio still.
I think so. Okay. Yeah, pretty sure.
We'll run with that. Yeah. So, Dark Match, Wrestle Kingdom. 5 hours of Japanese goodness that we don't have time for.
No.
To begin with, this aired Wednesday at 2 in the morning, 1 in the morning, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
We're all snoring. And that day was when we record Houston Wrestling Radio, so we had to find a way to keep it fresh-ish without going too far along in the tooth.
Yeah,
so we're recording it tonight, Saturday night. But by then, we've watched most of the matches. We teased the list online on our Facebook page to go over specifically the matches that we were going to watch.
And we may have mentioned this a little while ago, but I'm just going to reiterate. This is just our kind of our picks, our highlights of the event. Because just to piggyback on you, man, it's a 5 hour show.
Yeah. There were a couple of highlights that things that wrestling fans in general were looking forward to. Mm. For example, the debut of Cody Rhodes. Well, Cody in New Japan. His first match in New Japan Pro Wrestling would have been at this one. He wrestled Juice Robinson. We had an ROH title rematch from Final Battle. Kyle O'Reilly, the champion, wrestled Adam Cole. Baby. Katsuyori Shibata against Hiroki Goto for the Neverweight title. The last two Wrestle Kingdoms that we have all watched as a group, that Neverweight title, those matches have been horrendously awfully good in more ways than one. So we had to have that on our list. Mm-hmm. Kushida versus Takahashi for the light heavyweight title. Kushida, the light heavyweight division, he's pretty much the torchbearer there for New Japan in a nutshell. And his last two matches that we've seen haven't disappointed. And he's shown up at Ring of Honor a couple of times that we've seen. So we wanted to make sure that we gave it a little bit of attention. Of course, Hiroshi Tanahashi against Tetsuya Naito from the Single Bernardos de Japón.
Yeah.
Intercontinental title. And then the main event, obviously the main event of the match, Kenny Omega gets a title shot against Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP heavyweight title. So those are the matches that we're running over. Mm-hmm. And we're starting off from the beginning, Cody against how I explained on the podcast last week, CJ Parker from NXT.
Yeah, if you didn't tell me that, I was like, you tell me he's fighting Juice Robertson. I was like, who the fuck is that?
Would you have rather been fined by me just telling you, oh, hey, he's fighting Juice Robinson, instead of breaking the fourth wall and telling you who it really was?
Well, here's the thing. I never gave a shit about CJ Parker in NXT anyway. So you tell me that, I'm like, great, I still don't care. But let's get into this because, okay, there's a big to-do about Cody coming into New Japan. There was a really cool little vignette thing setting him up for his debut. It was like all gangster style and everything with him.
Yeah.
The American Nightmare was announced, and it says Cody is coming in the Bullet Club and everything. And I can dig it. Yeah, I got excited for it, because it looked really cool. Here's the thing. Like, there's two things about this whole Cody Rhodes situation. Okay, and I'll get into this. I think the match itself,
it's a good opening match.
It's good. Yeah, but
giving the devil his due for a guy that was mostly enhancement talent in NXT for him to be in front of 45,000 people and actually pull off a pretty decent match for an opening of their biggest pay-per-view of the year, good for him. I liked it. I mean, it wasn't I'm not regretting watching the match. It wasn't a bad match. Mm-hmm. It obviously is nowhere near the rest of the talent that's on this card that we're going to go over, but good for them.
Here's the thing. Okay, so Cody, he can't use his last name Rhodes, copyrights and whatnot for WWE, and whatever. But on his intro, his little, all his entrance that it comes out to, the first thing you hear is an over the PA announcement. It's Cody saying there's only one royal family in wrestling or something to that extent. You bring that up as your family, but you can't even say it. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it throws me off a little bit. You know, like the announcers can talk about the Rhodes, the commentators can talk about him.
Hell, right when the bell rang, freaking not Kevin Kelly, but
Steve Corino
like mentioned it. It's Cody Rhodes. Like, you don't have to have anybody tell you this, but it's freaking Cody Rhodes.
Yeah,
it's obvious.
And here's another thing. It's with him wrestling, like it's the same. He's wrestling the same style that I've seen him wrestle in WWE before Stardust. It's just whether it's he's like pulling from like Dashing or this figure or whatever the case may be, he's still got his same moveset. So it's not like you're seeing anything new for me anyway.
This is the same video game character from WWE 2008 as opposed to 2K17. It's still the same moveset, still the same look, still everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you know what? I'm going to say this right. I'm glad for Cody. I'm glad he's able to do what he's doing. I'm glad that he's got the opportunity to just say, hey, you know what? I don't need you right now, WWE. I'm going to go do my own thing. He's been in Northeast fighting Kurt Angle. He was in California, PWG, I think he was in there.
Debuted at Final Battle for Ring of Honor.
Now he's in Japan. So, like, in TNA also. And now in Japan. It's cool, but at the same time, like, how invested should I be that he's in Bullet Club? Because we've seen him in, like, one or two matches, you know, in all these different places, and he's gone. He's going to another thing to do that little checklist he made for himself, you know, which is fine.
For him.
For him, but, like,
where's the longevity as far as, like, maintaining a storyline in one particular place?
And you know, I don't know what his contract states or anything like that, or, like, how long he's going to be in New Japan, but I don't know, man. It just, like, I couldn't invest emotion into what I was seeing.
How long before you just lose interest in Cody, period? Because I kind of equate it to like buying a new car. Like you test drive a couple of cars until you got the one that has the right feel and sound and drive for you, and that's the one that you sign the documents and you drive away with.
Right.
So I'm thinking these first couple of months, he's trying PWG, Ring of Honor, TNA, New Japan. Which one does he like the most? Does he like the culture of Japanese wrestling? Does he like Orlando? Does he like the crowds up north where they're more agile? Does he like the resurgence of California as like a good territory for like mainstream independent pro wrestling?
Right, right.
Like, what does he like? Like, are you offering him any more time for him to find a spot before he gets settled, or is this already wearing you out?
This goes back to what we've blamed ourselves for all last year is, admittedly, we don't watch a lot of
that's too much
of the Indies or New Japan or whatever. So I just don't see that much of him anyways, you know, unless I want to catch him on YouTube or things like that. That's another thing. I don't know the next time I'll see him.
Yeah.
You know, so
where would you want to see him?
Oh, geez. It's hard to say right now. If you ask me, do I see him going back to WWE? I do eventually. After he gets all this out of his system and does what he's wanting to do, he's going to go back to the pasture, I think. He's going to go back to
– all roads lead to WWE.
That's why we keep this guy around.
Yeah.
All right. So, but enough of that. That was for Cody. Now, this Juice Robertson, CJ Parker – like I said, I was honestly never a fan of him in the first place. I do see improvement in him.
Yeah,
but I agree. But at the same time, if you go back to NXT, once you got past that gimmick, he was actually a decent wrestler in the ring.
There was a reason why he was the enhancement talent for like debuts of Kevin Owens.
Yeah,
his matches with Sami Zayn. I think he fought Samoa Joe. I don't remember.
I believe so. Yeah,
but
he broke his nose, I think.
Yeah, new guys coming in. That was Owens. Yeah. New guy, the new talent from the Indies coming in. CJ's the one that you made sure that he got you through. And if you can, if CJ wants the whole sign,
he's had a stupid gimmick. Yeah.
But he was pretty tolerant in the ring, and
you know what he was doing. And yeah. Obviously he's in New Japan now, so yeah, he's got the skill.
Yeah.
It's just kind of to me, there's no connection, you know. So I had to, you know.
Yeah, he actually the next night after Wrestle Kingdom, there's an event called New Year's Dash, and they're mostly some tag matches and 6-man, 8-man tags and stuff alike. He was actually in the main event for the tag match, and he actually got the pinfall over Intercontinental Champ.
Oh wow!
So they're actually giving him some kind of some kind of spotlight to see if he can grow out of it.
Actually, one more thing about Cody. During the match, he's being a heel because he's Bullet Club and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And it felt so forced.
Him doing the gun poses.
Yeah, and then, I don't know, it just didn't feel right. And then another thing, him pointing to Steve Corino and always like calling out Corino. And,
oh, and Kevin Kelly, do your job, commentate. That was an awesome move, right? Yeah, because I'm Cody Rhodes, dang it.
Yeah, but the But he kept going back to Steve Corino. Like, and I know from ECW days, you know, Dusty Rhodes and Steve Corino, they had a big feud.
I'm guessing he's trying to stem up, like, piggyback off of
because,
that to get some.
Because Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino, they're going back and forth about that too, about the history between the Rhodes and Corinos.
Yeah.
But what are they going to do? Like, is Steve Corino going to fight him? Or why even have that issue? Whatever. Okay, we've spent a lot of time on this match, so there's other things we can be talking about besides Cody Rhodes. Or Cody, excuse
me. Well, we're about to. Speaking of Ring of Honor,
yes.
As much as I wanted to see the final battle main event, I didn't get a chance to watch it. Yeah, we didn't either. Kyle O'Reilly finally got the ROH World title, beat Adam Cole. The rematch was here at Wrestle Kingdom. First impression, Kyle O'Reilly as a singles champion just didn't fit me.
Yeah.
It just – he has a lot of talent, but there's not enough of a character or charisma or substance for me to warrant investing in a character. He doesn't look like a character. He just looks like
– A wrestler.
A wrestler. Like a one-sided –
A mechanic.
Yeah, a mechanic.
And
a damn good one because we've raved of Red Dragon's work.
I like Kyle O'Reilly, but I just – Here's the thing, and I was thinking about that too, and we'll skip forward here for just a second because apparently he's done with ROH. Yeah. He didn't resign. Rumors are he's going to the WWE. Mm. But the reason I bring that up is because he reminds me of an early Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson. Mm. Think about when Daniel Bryan came on the scene, all the wrestling fans liked him. He just wasn't hitting the mark on the regular casual fans. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the yes, yes, yes thing and hell no and all this. That's when he really got over. And if Kyle O'Reilly goes to the WWE, I think they're gonna have to figure something out.
He looks like a guy that will probably be in NXT for a bit.
Unless they get some kind of character for him. Yeah. If they can do something with a yes thing for him, I think he'd do it. I just don't. And that's another thing. Even if they have something for him, does he have the charisma as Daniel Bryan has? Daniel Bryan just has that natural, like, you like him all of a sudden. Like, mm-hmm. you meet him and you like him.
Yeah.
Kyle O'Reilly, he's a good mechanic. He's a good wrestler.
I kind of see Kyle O'Reilly as, like, a Samoa Joe potential, but you need a lot of work or a lot of history because whatever Kyle O'Reilly can do personifying being angry or being hype or being intimidated or intimidating in a match, Samoa Joe does that 10 times over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's from Joe's history that we've seen him in TNA, X Division, dominating some people even before that, Ring of Honor, Summer of Joe, dominating and beating everybody left and right. I'm not sure if O'Reilly has that tenor or if he has that in him to get to a level that where he can stand out on his own as opposed to being kind of carbon copies of people that not only we've already seen, but we think are better.
Yeah.
You know, that being said, dude, there's a shit ton of chemistry between Cole and O'Reilly. Obviously, old tag team partners in Future Shock.
Mm-hmm.
The stiffness is there. I couldn't help but laugh at Adam Cole's new theme music where they like remixed his Adam Cole Bebe into the theme and then it like repeats itself kind of like a tick in your head before the music starts.
I was really paying attention to the music. I just kind of got into the match on that one. But I didn't. This match itself, it didn't really feel like a title match. It didn't. I think it's like 10 minutes, if that much.
10 or 12.
Yeah, yeah, it didn't last very long. I do like the finish of it, all those thrust kicks to the head. Jesus Christ, yeah. That was pretty sick. But as much as we just kind of, you know, talked about O'Reilly, Adam Cole, baby, I wouldn't be surprised if 2017 we might see him in WWE.
Really?
Yeah. I think that was a rumor not so long ago.
For a while, yeah.
No, there's I think just a couple days ago I messaged you and Scott and Abel about that, about a
couple of people that re-signed and some didn't. And I was kind of surprised that Cole re-signed.
No, Cole didn't re-sign. Cole's one of the ones that was apparently
O'Reilly didn't re-sign. Cole and the Young Bucks did.
Re-signed. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. I was thinking it was Cole and Raymond Rowe and
Raymond Rowe's trying to get his partner Hansen in the door too, yeah.
But they're all going to WWE.
Yeah.
I just wonder Adam Cole's in there. But anyway. I could see him going. He's got the look,
he's got charisma coming out of everywhere, dude. And it's not like in your face, but it's just like a self-confidence that just comes out without having to do a lot. And honestly, watching this match really makes me want to see the final battle match to see how hard hitting that was, because that, for example, like when we had to complain at SummerSlam that Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler for the WWE title was like in the very middle of the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. I would have thought for a match that had this much build for that much time, I would have liked to have seen this match a little higher on the card and given a few more minutes to see if it rivaled the first title match, which main evented ROH's biggest show of the year. So if I was a big fan of those 12 minutes that I got in Wrestle Kingdom, I really want to see how that final battle pay-per-view ended, knowing that Kyle O'Reilly already had beaten him for the belt.
And another thing is I still like this partnership with ROH and New Japan. I think it's cool that not only do you get a world title match from ROH at New Japan's biggest show of the year, but the title actually changed hands. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty cool. And it's when you're not the admittedly the biggest, you know, promotion in the world, mm-hmm. it's cool that you kind of help each other out, and you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, and mm-hmm. this partnership's been going on for what, a year or two now.
About two or three.
Yeah.
We've had New Japan wrestlers in Ring of Honor for quite some time, and they've had a couple of War of the Worlds events every year for the past couple of years. But it's safe to say that in this decade, any popularity in the United States from New Japan has mostly been because of the Ring of Honor coverage and having the New Japan guys come over. And that's the first time I heard of Nakamura at all, was him in Ring of Honor. His television match with Roderick Strong about a year and a half ago, I was like, holy shit, this guy. Yeah. So any resemblance that I'm getting of New Japan is probably most likely because of the exposure that I've seen him through Ring of Honor.
I think that when my first re-entry into New Japan from this current era was when we went to NWA Invasion in Houston. That was that's the first time I had seen New Japan in a long time.
Return of Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah, I'm talking like 10 to 15 years has been since I've last seen New Japan. So it was kind of cool dip my toes in the water on that one. But then, yeah, like you're saying, once Ring of Honor started doing it, no, it was that. And then it was also, they had it was the Ring of Honor, and they also had the show on Access.
Yeah.
With the older episodes they're re-airing. So all that kind of combined, and it's helped us out a lot.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So anyway, enough of that. So anything else about the ROH match from that one?
Not that we haven't already gone over.
Yeah. Okay. What do we got? What else?
Whew. Katsuyori Shibata.
Shibata bread.
It's his match last year against Tomohiro Ishii just had me going like this the entire time, like rubbing my eyes and my forehead, like, how are these two still breathing and standing up straight and still flinging their arms?
Yeah.
That was probably one of the stiffest wrestling matches I had seen in the past like 3 or 4 years. You know, because we had Wrestle Kingdom the first, like 2 years ago, where we saw Nakamura and Ibushi. that was a lot of high flying and stiff kicks. I kind of saw a little bit of that through some NXT, but it was still really fresh for me to like have my eyes open and have them like laying on the floor. For me to see a match like Ishii and Shibata last year, it damn near blew my mind. So when I knew that Shibata as the champion was going to defend the belt at Wrestle Kingdom, this was one of the matches that I thought was going to steal the show. And the cherry on top when I introduced it to you guys was they've wrestled six times already.
Yeah.
Six. And the record between them is 2-2. And there you go. Two, two, and two. And that extra two over here is not from time limit draws. Two times in that rivalry. Yeah, rivalry. The referee had to stop the match for double knockout. That's how stiff these motherfuckers fight. And when I heard this before the match started, I was like, man, what the fuck am I getting myself into? And then 3 minutes in, I was like, holy fuck, what the fuck am I getting myself into?
Dude, well, you're not getting yourself in anything. These two guys are beating the shit out of each other. That's what's
good
going on.
Lord.
Apparently, there's like the, and this is what, you know, the kind of commentators are talking about. There's a kind of a new era of strong style. These matches with Shibata and Goto, this is representative more of the older strong style, where you basically got two guys standing in the ring and they're just like going back and forth, no selling nothing. They're just beating the shit out of each other. That's all it is, really. Until they can't stand no more. So, but that's pretty much the match.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned that because last year I was waiting for Ishii to break out a can of spinach and squeeze it out and just start mauling people. Dude, some of these kicks that Shibata was laying in on Goto, and for all the matches that I've seen Goto, even the announcers were filling me in, even though I already had like a secondhand knowledge. I've never seen Hirooki Goto win anything big. And then the commentary brought it home that, dude, he's been missing out on the big ones.
Yeah.
You know, I did catch Hirooki Goto lose the finals to the G1 climax to Kenny Omega. I was surprised he was there in the first place. I didn't think he would get that far. So for him to lose, like, yeah, okay, this is our version of Sami Zayn. Gets close to the glass ceiling, and then he realizes that it's hard, and he just falls down. And they built that up.
He gets beat down.
He gets beat down. And the commentary brought that home that, dude, Goto's like right beneath the cream of the crop but doesn't break through the dirt, you know? And
underdog.
Yeah. And, man, the licks this fool was taking, I was like, shit. I was waiting for Red Shoes to be like, and just, like, drop it because –
Dude, oh, Red Shoes. Red Shoes took a beating that night.
Man, I'm surprised Goto wasn't wearing like an Everlast sticker over his face because he would just use it as a punching bag or a kicking bag. And Goto, Shibata was laying into him. Nasty.
Well, getting to the end of that match, he was setting him up for Goto's finisher, the GTR. Mm-hmm. That's what he was setting up for, and eventually he did get it. But before that, one thing I do want to point out, he put him in a position for DDT. And what he did with that is he got him into basically a ZDT, and then when he went down, he turned around with an elbow to the back of the head.
Yeah.
And then you put him down right on his thigh. So he's basically like Shibata's face is like in between his leg and his elbow. And then he turns around and then does his GTR on him. It's like, good God. Well, at least
that's GTR is a cool looking finisher, dude. Yeah. I like it a lot. Yeah.
That's how you finish a match right there.
I honestly was not expecting Goto to win this match. So for him to actually pull out the victory, it was pretty good.
I had no, like, stake as far as character-wise of who did what.
You're just looking for a good old full-fashioned ass-whooping.
That was an ass-whooping.
So Goto actually knocked Shibata off. Dude, I was not expecting that. But, dude, that has not deterred me and Shibata in any way, man. Mm-mm. Like, I'm Shibata actually toured with Ring of Honor at the end of last year in a couple of house shows, and I think in Final Battle. Dude, if Shibata comes to any of the Texas shows next year or anywhere in the area, that's like an incentive for me to actually get up off my ass and get a ticket and actually make a point to go out of town.
Yeah, because you need a reason to go out of town.
Versus for New Japan, dude.
This fucker goes out of town like every weekend. Jesus.
Every other weekend. Travis. Got to make sure seasons exist outside of Houston because we get everything in like a week.
Yeah. We're short. I'm wearing shorts, you know, 2 days ago. Today we're wearing jackets and long sleeve shirts. 20 degrees outside. Anyway.
Kushida versus Takahashi for the light heavyweight title.
Okay. This match, full disclosure, I did not see.
Okay. That's all right. It's so okay. Just 5 hours. Yeah. You did what you could. And I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you. Yeah. Well,
that means a lot coming from you.
Again, Kushida lost.
I saw one thing on this match.
Takahashi was actually Kamaitichi from Ring of Honor.
What?
Remember the mass wrestling protege that Daniels and Kazarian had in Ring of Honor for a while from Japan that they were building him up? It's this guy. Like, he was exiled, apparently, from New Japan. So he went to Ring of Honor. Yeah, so he went to Ring of Honor to get some training. And you can actually see some of Christopher Daniels' attitude coming out through this kid in this match with Kushida. Mm. Like, you can tell some of it was actually rubbing off. And the one spot you did catch from the highlights was the backsplash where he, like, only got maybe this dude's, like, elbow or shoulder, and the rest of him just went.
What was he trying to do? Like, I don't understand. Like, his opponent was on the outside of the ring, standing straight up looking at him. And then this fool comes off the top rope.
Demon!
Dude, like, he did, like a backsplash, like, kind of. Like, I don't know if he was trying to do, like, a leg drop, like John Cena does.
You were asking me that, and I told you. He's like, dude, he had his legs stuck straight out like John Cena when he jumps off the top rope to do that leg drop. But Kushida's, like, looking at you. He doesn't have his head sticking out like a guillotine ready to get cut off.
But he was either that or, like, how Kevin Owens or Samoa Joe does the little backdrop thing.
Yeah.
It's one of those two. Regardless, he missed his ass. Like,
there was no H2O in the pool. No. What Mara would say. No. Regardless, he still came back from that. Beat Kushida for the belt.
Yeah.
He's a new light heavyweight champ in a nutshell.
Yeah.
We have two matches, dude. I just recently watched this because, admittedly, again, this happened Wednesday morning. Some loyal wrestling fans and some loyal listeners of ours actually watched this Wednesday morning, and they were already posting online, bro, Omega and fucking Okada, you got to watch that shit.
To the point, it wasn't just them. Everybody online. Yeah,
point where I skipped Tanahashi and Tetsuya Naito and went straight to watching Omega and Okada. So I didn't get to watch this match until today.
So did I.
And full disclosure, after watching the main event before I watched this match, dude, there is a fucking argument to be made that Tetsuya Naito and Hiroshi Tanahashi could be the match of the night for that pay-per-view. And it's shocking to say because there was two or three matches beneath there that we've gone over that were really good, dude. This... The pay-per-view just went like this and this and this and this and this. But right towards the end, like, it's like...
I don't know what you're saying, but okay. So, like, I don't know why, but, like, nobody was really talking about, like, unless I missed it. I don't recall seeing a lot of people talking about this particular match.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because this one was more based on psychology of the match, psychology of the wrestling, but also psychology of the characters themselves.
Yes.
I missed it the first time. I had to go back because you pointed out to me about the intros for Naito. When he came out, first of all, I got to say, like, I love the fact that, you know, he's a champ, so he comes out second, but, like, the way he came out was slow, methodical. He took his time. Okay, never. But he took his time. You know, he walked down the ramp, and then walked around the ramp, and then he went into the ring.
He had that Kurt Angle walk, like none of his knees were working.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Was like, yeah.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And then, like, he finally gets in the ring, he gives the belt, and then he's like, he's got a three-piece suit on. He can take the jacket off, he's got to take the vest off.
This isn't Cesaro where he can just, like, go full fucking strip club and take it all off in one thing. This ain't Chippendales. No, yeah. He's like, I'm getting paid by the hour. I'm getting OT tonight. So,
and here's what I love about that.
Who does this remind you of? Because you mentioned this.
You're not gonna believe this one. You're not gonna think about this. Okay, I thought about when I saw this, going old school.
How old?
Like
Gino Hernandez?
farther. We're talking black and white. We're talking. I was thinking Gorgeous George.
Really?
Gorgeous George was the heel that.
Whoa, Professor Travis digging one up from the archives.
Deep cuts, yeah! Right? Deep cuts. Yeah. All right. Here's
Gorgeous
why.
George. Defend yourself.
Gorgeous George was the first heel persona that actually was flamboyant. He took his time. He had a robe like he was. He made his opponents wait for him to do his big intro, take the robe off, prepare for the match. You know, make sure his hair is okay and everything. And this is kind of. Yeah, the same thing. He was making Tanahashi wait. He was making the fans wait. He was doing like everything on his schedule. And as a champion, I really dug that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Tanahashi being the face. But the commentators, what they're pointing about Tanahashi was he's starting to get some boos. And yeah. And you heard that throughout the throughout the match.
A couple of guys that tried to get us in the New Japan had told me that Tanahashi's kind of like the John Cena of their brand. That he's like the established talent. He's been there forever. He's been the guy that's been built. Hell, it took him at least 4 matches in 7 years to main event with Okada to finally have Okada built up as his own weight.
Yeah.
And it's starting to catch up. And the announcers did a good job of displaying Tanahashi as the full-blown babyface and Tetsuya Naito as the anti-hero, as their version, not of Steve Austin per se, but in that kind of reactions. Like the fans like a bad guy that
– Here's what it is. As much as I just compared to that earlier, I'm going to kind of second you. I'm going to fine-tune this here, what you're trying to say. Here's what I took it as. I took it as Tanahashi is the Bret Hart – and Naito is the Steve Austin from 96.
There you go.
We have a change in
attitudes.
I guess so, but just I guess the Japanese audience, they're starting to
like other things. It takes them a while to catch up to current events.
I guess, yeah. But it's just one of those things where, and even as the commentators saying, I was seeing it, like, mm-hmm. because Tanahashi, he was doing some, like, he was trying to mock him, or you know, anytime he would try to do something cool, he would get booed.
Even in the beginning, like car and elbow tie up, has got him in the corner. You expect the babyface Tanahashi clean break or just pat him on the on the chest and just back away. He actually short left punch right in the gut, and the crowd even reacted to it like, ooh, that's not something John Cena would do.
No, here's what Japanese.
And so, and again, when he had night, he did a frog splash off of Naito's fucking head outside of the ring, and he was laid out, and Tanahashi's just there chilling like,
well, because he's
doing his pose, mocking Naito's pose, which awesomely Naito did in the beginning, right, when he was teasing the go off the rope and he outside the ring.
Yeah, he kind of did a slide around
slid and did his pose and looked up like, dude, yeah.
And people, and that's why people are thinking are certain gravitate towards him, because he I guess in for the Japanese audience, he is kind of being like the cool hip dude, and Tanahashi is the one that's kind of mocking him. And if he's mocking him being cool, then he's mocking the audience for. Yeah.
But how much of that is him trying to be a bad guy and him actually being like John Cena, like the establishment? Like, dude, I've been here for this X amount of years. I've held X amount of titles. You shouldn't be doing this shit to a guy like me.
Maybe.
You know? And that's the part where I liked about this match where, for example, like not to jump ahead to the main event. The main event started at like 20 miles an hour, and then it got to 100. This match was like at a steady 75 the entire way. And it was, like you said, it was a lot of storytelling in between the match. They were both aiming for each other's knees. Freaking Naito actually lifted his leg up when Tanahashi went for a drop kick at his knee. And then just said, eh, and then bam, kicked him in his own in his weak knee. And they were playing off of it back and forth, and they were finding each other's weaknesses. And it was a steady pace. It didn't feel like you were being overwhelmed, but it didn't feel too slow that it was being dragged. And at like 28 minutes for a match like that, that was like the perfect morsel.
It didn't feel like 30 minutes.
It didn't feel like 30 minutes. Like, I was expecting maybe 5 or 10 more, not just because I liked what I was seeing, but like you talked about earlier, dude, there's something about Naito now that his charisma just hooks you and you just want to see more of it, especially when you have a guy like Tanahashi in the role that he's playing right now as like the establishment, where he's actually throwing it back at him. Mm-hmm. So the perfect way for a match like that to end is to have the upstart kind of overtake the establishment, and that's exactly what happened. Naito did a Destino, Super Destino from the top rope, and he's like, "Nah, didn't play as that's not going to be enough." He picked them up and he did another one,
right,
and laid them out flat for a clean three. You know, this is in Gobernadores de Japón that he's a leader of, and there was no interference at
the
all.
What? Say it again.
His group is Los Ingobernables de Japón, the Ungovernables of Japan.
The Ungovernables.
Yeah, Los Ingobernables. There's a clique like that in Mexico, and now there's a clique in Japan. Wow. So for a guy that's in charge of like an anti-heel group, say the NWO, you would expect Hogan, when he's about to lose, to have his friends jump and help him get the win. Right. No, this guy won clean without any help whatsoever. And I guess that's also another part of catching the guard.
That wasn't even made clear to me that he was part of a group. I didn't know. I thought he was on his own.
Oh, dude, Carino was like all up in the group. So, like, for example, when
is that why he was saying we won?
Like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So in the beginning, right. when
Carino's part of the group,
well, he's a fan of the group.
Oh, okay.
So for example, when
Jeez, Naito,
when Naito took 9 minutes to get around the ring before he got in, before his match started, he did a fist bump to Carino, acknowledging that he's like, all right, that's our number one fan right there. Ah, konnichiwa.
Okay,
you know?
I got you.
So
it's all making sense now, ladies and gentlemen. All right. There was a cool spot. There's a lot of cool spots in this match, but one that really kind of stood out to me, Tanahashi did his sling blade on the apron.
Oh, and it looked gorgeous, dude. Yeah. He timed it so well, and Naito sold that shit.
And then he followed that up immediately
with the crossbody.
Yeah, off the top rock splash.
Yeah,
onto the floor. Yeah,
and especially the commentator towards the end, where Tanahashi had hit Naito outside the ring. And he went for his hi-fi flow, the frog splash, on his back and hit it. And then he rolled him over and he jumped right back over. And the commentators, like Kevin Kelly was already, you know, when announcers are commentating and the superstar is about to hit his finisher and you already assume the match is going to be over and they're lax in their commentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Kevin Kelly was like, oh, he's going to hit him with the hi-fi flow. Oh, my God. He countered with the knees. And freaking Naito sold it because he had been worked on the knees. So he knew that it was going to hurt him just as much as it was going to hurt Tanahashi. And he did it anyway for self-preservation. I fucking love that.
As much as I loved all the selling throughout the whole match of them working each other's legs and knees, my one nit to pick on this is as much as they did all that for almost 20 minutes of the match, it didn't feel like to me that was had an impact on the finish of the match.
I agree.
None of all that work on the legs,
and Naito's hopping off the rope for the super.
Yeah, so
and doing the I can see that,
and that's what it dropped some points for me on that match because they were working on something really good, and then it just some of the pieces didn't really connect on that.
Yeah,
but I love the match.
But there were very few, very few nits to pick in this match. And then we lead up to the main event, and that's weird. And another highlight of the entire thing, up to that point, every title that had been defended in the pay-per-view had changed hands.
Right.
So we get to Tanahashi and Naito, and you're already thinking, all right, LOL, Cena wins.
Yeah. Right.
So throughout this whole match, I'm just waiting for that one point where Tanahashi pulls off what he normally does to get his victory. And so when he didn't, I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And on top of the upstart with Lightning McQueen beating like the king, you know, it's like, okay, I'm digging this. I like it. It has its flaws. But that's like a couple of molds on Cindy Crawford. I still hit it.
And I thought my references were dated. All right. So
have you seen her lately? Selling those couches for rooms to go?
No. Mm. She's still good.
Main event time. Speaking of bitch, Kenny Omega, the winner of the G1 Climax, gets his title shot at Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP World title.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Yeah, world title. That's it.
Before this match, the intro.
Yes.
You go ahead. Talk about the intro.
This was basically Kenny Omega with glass slippers. Like, this was his moment. This was his ball. This was his dance. This was his homecoming king. Like, they made a huge deal of this. Almost too much of a deal.
Think so?
Yeah, in hindsight. But regardless, we get these Terminator claps for the Young Bucks and for Kenny Omega, both in Ring of Honor and in New Japan, when they're either wrestling together or wrestling separately. And so they played off of that, and they did a spoof of the Terminator 2 movie.
Yeah.
And he's like shows up kneeled and naked and takes some Japanese guy's clothes and beats the hell out of him. And he comes out to the ring with like a T-1000 mask covering half of his face and that long ass rifle. I was like, good Lord.
The first thing I thought of was, man, Cage has got to be pissed. Because, you know, he's not a man, he's a machine.
A machine!
I gotta say, that the Terminator opening vignette thing, that's, I guess Lucha Underground got a producer.
Commission?
Yeah, they got some kind of, they're directing credits or something. I don't know, they're producing that segment. But that was like straight up Lucha Underground stuff, man. It was funny.
I got a hell of a laugh. I'm still laughing about it now. And then Kazuchika Okada comes out making it rain like he always does. Finally gets in the ring. Omega picks up one of the bills. Like, man. So I love that. Like, set the tone that, you know, this Kenny Omega's here, the cleaner. He means business. This is his first legit shot at a heavyweight title. Mm-hmm. He's going to go for it. And after the feeling out process, you can tell that, dude, the focus on Omega of winning this match. I fucking love this match.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's fucking long.
Like 45 minutes
it's
or something?
50 minutes. Yeah. I damn near burned my entire lunch break watching this match, realizing when it was over that I forgot to eat.
Well, here's the thing about that. As long as it was, it didn't feel very long.
No, it didn't.
Like, it had the pacing was very solid. Like, there wasn't that many flashy stuff in there, but it didn't get too boring during the transitional phases of the match either. It was just kind of, like you were saying earlier, it started, at 50, went to 100 or whatever, but still, like, it didn't feel like it was conjointed or anything on the timing or the pacing of the match. So, for a match that long, you got to give him credit.
Yeah.
Credit's due.
You know? And that sold me as Kenny Omega as a main event wrestler.
Yeah.
That match was awesome, dude.
You know what? Here's the thing about that. And I have some notes on here.
Go for it.
There's a lot of stuff that I noticed that Kenny Omega in this match, he was doing a lot of the heavy lifting on this thing. And it felt like Okada was, he was basically playing defense until the end of the match when he won. But I thought that was interesting, you know, that this was like a showcase, I guess, for what Kenny Omega can do. I got several notes here about some of the stuff that Omega was doing. A missile drop kick to the back of the head. That was towards the beginning of the match. Yeah. Springboard moonsault over the barrier. That was one of the first like high spots where, he got Okada over the barrier outside and he had done a running moonsault, springboard moonsault over the barrier to where he was at. Okada was the one that brought in a table.
Yeah, Okada again, the babyface knowing that that this is what Kenny Omega does, so he's going to try to beat him to the punch.
Yeah, because they used tables earlier
in the G1 climax. Yeah. He damn near killed Naito with some tables.
Yeah, so Okada brought it out, but it didn't really get used at first. But there was, not too long after that, it got the tables returned. And Okada was on the ground, and the table, I think the Bucks put the table on top of him.
The double stomp
off the apron onto the floor, and where he landed right on the chest.
Yeah.
Oh God, that just looks sick. And
dude, the grossest 1-2 combo in that match for me was the quick release overhead suplex from the top rope that Omega gave Okada.
His neck.
Yeah, that's the first punch. The second punch, oddly enough, was the awesome work from the commentary that grossed me the fuck out. Because Carino goes, you know what? 3 years from now, when Okada gets neck fusion surgery, he's gonna remember that exact moment where he realized that's why he needed it.
And the fact Carino, that keep it real,
yeah, almost fucking too real. Like Kurt Angle, Steve Austin, Edge, Chris Benoit, who else has been a victim of neck injuries? You know, and remembering that after even the fucking gruelest match that we saw with fucking Shibata and Goto. Dude, this shit's fucking real. you can suspend your disbelief so much in pro wrestling at a fault that you forget at some point that these are real human beings doing this shit and they got to wake up the next day.
Yeah.
Or they have a family to go to that night. Or fuck, they have New Year's Dash to do the next night.
Right.
And you forget. So when Carino reminded me, I was like, I shouldn't be liking this as much as I am.
Because, you're a sadist.
Yeah, a masochist. A little of both. But fuck. But the fact that even now, 3 days after watching that match, I can still remember that.
Yeah.
That's kind of telling of how good overall this whole thing was. Again, from all sides, like Red Shoe selling Kenny Omega's attitude and getting pushed around, Okada actually trying to play Omega's game to the punch, the commentary just doing a good job of describing everything so that you don't have to be watching this for 8-9 months to realize why these two guys were here, why this title match is a big deal, why wrestling this match in front of these people in this place is a big deal. They hit this motherfucker out of the park. Yeah. As much as I loved, as a pure wrestling standpoint, the match between Tanahashi and Naito, this is my match of the night.
Yeah, it's definitely my match of the night too. I just kind of reiterate what I said. I think it was a spotlight for Kenny Omega. If I have one nitpick to say about this, I would say that I think because of everything that was going on in this match, I think Omega should have won.
I agree completely.
I just think like he was doing so much damage to Okada. For an Okada to just like flip it around and get he like
that jumping tombstone was awesome.
Yeah, but it was just kind of like LOL single wins, you know. It's just a little bit, like
a little bit,
you know.
I haven't been watching it enough to have that kind of opinion on that guy specifically, but I can see where you're coming from with that.
It just came out of nowhere for me, and not to say that Okada wasn't doing anything in the match. He was doing some stuff in this match, but it just felt like Omega was out wrestling him,
dude. The back body drop slingshot thing that he did to Omega, where he went splat on the table.
Well, there's a thing that Omega did. He tried to do he did a power bomb earlier. That got countered into something else, and then he actually picked up Okada to do a slam power to do a power bomb into a pin combination. Yeah. He picked him up,
deadlift.
Yeah, for a power bomb, dude. Like, come on.
And Okada's bigger than him.
Yeah,
yeah, height wise and weight wise. So yeah, dude, this was Omega's night to shine.
Yeah,
and it sucks when, like, contract disputes or and stuff like that get in the way to where, hey, you know, Kyle O'Reilly could have a decent run in Ring of Honor, but he didn't want to resign. Right. So guess what? He's losing the belt. Yeah. You know, okay, Omega, they don't think having a dual language guy is a necessity to be the leader of New Japan, and they don't want to do anything with Omega. Well, guess what? Omega's not going to win. Yeah, but stuff behind the scenes is not gonna taint my opinion of what I saw on the screen.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's fucking my match of the night. And even though there's two of us, and even though this is a separate show from our normal match of the week that we've already done, there is not – well, there might be just one person. But other than that, every person that I've seen on Facebook, on Twitter, in person, we've posted this on our Facebook page. Like, hey, what's your match of the night? Dude, overwhelmingly, resoundingly, it's Omega and Okada. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago – IWGP title was not the main event. That was on our match of the year list. Last year, Intercontinental title match, not the main event of the match. That ended up on our match of the year list. This match, Kazuchika Okada versus Kenny Omega for the IWGP heavyweight title.
Right.
Is it a yes or a no for your match of the year?
Oh, yeah. Dang. That was easy.
Suck it, Abel. We already got one on the list. Again, without you. It was a tough one, though, because I had made my mind up when I got here without having to hear everybody else's opinion.
Right.
Omega and Okada fucking.
And I was staying away from the internet as much as I could. Like, I was seeing, like, pictures of this and that, and I was just trying to stay away from, like, opinions and things like that because I just wanted to go in there with a fresh take.
I had already told you that I saw these matches, and due to our history, I didn't build up shit for anything. Yeah. I let you figure that out on your own.
Yeah.
And coming in here before we recorded, I already knew Omega and Okada was going to be my match. But good Lord help me if Tanahashi and Naito put up a fucking fight. Because I was tempted to make them both a match because they were for the storytelling of one match against the pure physicality of the other, they balanced each other out so good that I could pick either one or both of them.
What do you say if we just make them both match of the year candidates?
You really don't want to make Abel happy today, do you?
That's got nothing to do with that. I'm just saying if we can't decide,
dude. Wait, I was on that boat. I didn't know you were. Are you to watch that match twice?
My original
today.
Thing was Omega Okada was match of the year candidate for me, and Tanahashi and Naito was going to be honorable mention. Mm-hmm. I'm still leaning towards that, but if you say, if you say that we could have two candidates, and no one's going to fault us for it because they're both really good.
You know what kind of a Pandora's box we'd be opening if we did that, right?
I can't help it. There's two good matches on the same card. How's that? I can't help that.
Oh, wow.
New Year's, new rules.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have two.
You heard it here from Chris first, ladies and gentlemen.
We have two matches for Match of the Year already. From Wrestle Kingdom 11.
Yeah.
I can already feel another gray hair growing out of my scalp right now. But this is going to be fun come December. Because you know, that even if the list doesn't add up, there's over an hour and a half worth of wrestling in just two matches so far in our Match of the Year list. But that's what it comes down
to. And you know what? We don't watch as much New Japan stuff as the other stuff that we watch. So we'll make up for it. Two matches in the same card.
Sounds like we have a decision. Hot dog, we got a wiener.
Yes.
Yes. And I guess that sums up our coverage of New Japan for tonight.
Another year and another great event. They just...
This is the third year in a row that New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom sets the standard for what we expect as good shows, especially when the competition at times doesn't really step up like that. You know?
Yeah.
I would hand over fist choose Wrestle Kingdom last year over WrestleMania last year. And I was at WrestleMania last year. You know,
That is true. He was there. He was in the stands. He's like, man, I wish I was Wrestle Kingdom.
I was like, man, let me get that freaking Rosetta Stone for Japanese broke out real quick because, man, I was missing it. And this year, again, this is going to set the standard for what we consider as good wrestling. Like, they gave us some of the greatest technical wrestling in Tanahashi and Naito, and then they gave us some awesome crash and burn spots and some great hatred and build for a rookie guy that could probably make it to the top with Kenny Omega and dude.
And all the flashy stuff, it wasn't a whole lot. Not like when I think of flashy, I think of Young Bucks. And I'm sure they had a match on there too, right? But we didn't check out their match. Mm-mm. No,
they defended the IWGP against Roppongi Vice.
Okay.
And they lost. Actually, they lost. Roppongi Vice won the titles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, and I've said this before. I've gone on record. I'm saying I like Young Bucks, but I don't consider their matches great. I consider them entertaining. So, like, that kind of eliminates them from any match candidates. Yeah. For me, anyways. Some people don't agree with that. But
but he's white, so he's right.
Well, I didn't say it, so hey.
But, coming from the Mexican, yeah. Right.
So, man, I don't remember where I was going with that either. So
I don't worry, neither did I.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, that's, like I said, they, New Japan, they just know how to put on a good show.
Asshole.
Yeah, so, yeah. I don't know where I was going with that. Help me out here.
Is that it?
I think so. Clearly I'm out.
Well, that's episode 3 of the Dark Match in the books. We've got Houston Wrestling Radio every Wednesday live at 8:00 Central. Eight-ish. We tried to get it right once and it failed miserably. We've got the Royal Rumble coming up in a few weeks. We've got TakeOver San Antonio coming up also the night before the Rumble. We're working on a plan to give you a as yet untitled episode special. We're going to be reviewing the true history of the WWE Royal Rumble documentary/movie that WWE recently released in anticipation for our preview of this year's Royal Rumble that we will all be attending in San Antonio.
And I got tickets for both TakeOver and Royal Rumble.
Dang, Mark.
I'll see you there too.
Yeah. until next time, that's it. So, toodles.
Pop your culture.
Yeah. Top guys.